step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 754. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined for the second time in a row, my lovely co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You are listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We stream this show live on the World Wide Web at koop.org. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
My name is Regina George.
It is Wednesday, January 10th, 2024. On the show today, it's Frontera Fest all day long. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater and film in New York, Los Angeles, Austin, Boston, and everywhere else you can get lost in. We'll be right back.
This girl is a fugly cat.
Okay, Regina George, we're just going to make her a little bit more quiet. Nicole Shiro, hi.
Hello.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
How's life?
Good. I just got back late last night from the San Francisco area. I went to visit.
And boy, are your arms tired.
I know. It was a long flight.
You went to see your grandmother.
I went to see my grandmother, born 1924, that woman, that Betty Burns. And she was just asking, I've been doing the family tree. So then she's like, have you found so-and-so? And we plugged in so much stuff, and I've learned even crazier stuff about my family and had a really great visit.
You've got a pretty crazy family, too. Well, that's good.
I do, yeah. And then we sat and talked theater a lot, and we talked Angela Lansbury for about 45 minutes.
Well, you kind of have to.
She's from New York, so she saw every single show. But she was telling me that when she first saw Angela in her first performance when she was 18 years old, she's like, I knew that woman would be someone.
Yeah, she had her. I was like, yeah. She had her pegged.
But yeah, it's really kind of cool to talk to her about theater because, like, she's seen everything. She and I both have an obsession with Jerry Orbach, so we've gone down that rabbit hole.
There you go.
She's seen Jerry Orbach in everything he's been. Like, you name this weird moment, she's like, oh, I was there. And I'm like, of course you were. She's Betty Burns.
Wonderful. This is the Betty Burns Hour on KOOP. Let's introduce the folks that are joining us here so they can join in the conversation, shall we?
Yes.
Yes, we shall. Ken Webster. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Everybody here all we have is veterans of the show. Jeff Deshay Johnson.
How y'all doing?
Hey. And then we have Tom Booker.
Hello.
Hello. And Janet Makis.
Hello there.
And then, of course, we're also joined by guest co-host, Miss Patty Neftiven.
Hello.
Patty's also my cohort in crime over at Ground Floor Theater. And then we also have me. So we just played a little bit of the movie version of Mean Girls, which opens. I thought it opened on Friday, but I saw that you can go see it at the Alamo tomorrow. So I guess it opens tomorrow. And that was Renee Rapp singing in the film, who's playing Regina George, who was also Regina George in, she was a replacement.
So she was the winner of the Jimmys. And
she was the winner of the Jimmys.
Yep, she went in from the winner of the Jimmys, and then a couple of years later took over the role of Regina George on Broadway before it closed.
Yep.
But she's also done some, like, poppy stuff since then.
She's got a music.
After the Mean Girls.
Right, she's got a music career, which is actually her more of her
jam.
Focus. Yeah, it's her focus. There is actually a very interesting article. I'm looking for it. There it is, Renee Rapp. An article in
the 2019 Jimmy
She was
winner.
Indeed. The BroadwayDirect.com had an interview.
My noggin's still working.
That was just talking with her. Actually, this article was written by former guest of Offstage and On the Air, Lee Sheps.
Oh! We have interviewed Lee Sheps
because she has my last name. I thought we might have been spelled the way my name spells.
Well, she was curious about that too. We need to have her on as a guest again. She was fun.
Yeah. Who anybody like, dislike, or care, or know anything about Mean Girls?
I've worked with some.
Yeah, me too. What were you going to say, Ken?
Oh, I just know the film. I haven't seen the stage version.
It was just here, not all that long ago.
So it's actually not too long ago. I took my niece to see it. I took my niece on a backstage tour of Mean Girls. I became the cool auntie that day.
And your niece, Morgan?
Morgan, our New York Bureau roving reporter. She started doing reviews for us when she was six, and she's now about to turn 18.
Well, anyway, Lee... Sheps wrote this article for BroadwayDirect.com, which I really didn't even know existed. Talking about her, you know, basically her whole career. The first thing she auditioned for was her first musical with Annie.
Doesn't love some Annie, you know I love it.
When she was 10, she
took Morgan to see that one.
She got a role of an added orphan.
Oh, that's funny.
One of the things I resonated with in this article was she said, I did it as a means for my parents to get me out of the house, which is why my parents sent me to acting school.
That's funny.
It was all about getting me out of the house. She was in the 2018 Jimmy Awards.
And she
said no to Tina Fey when Tina Fey asked her to do the Mean Girls musical. She initially
said
no.
The musical?
The musical.
The stage. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll read this quote. I think she said no to Broadway, Faye recounts to Broadway Direct, meeting with Rapp in Lorne's SNL office. My recollection of it is we offered her Broadway. I believe she sort of said like, yeah, I don't know. I want to work on my music. Lorne and I were like, just come and have a meeting with us. I gave her the hard sell. You have plenty of time to work on your music and you could be doing this and the show at night. And then she said, oh, okay.
All right, I guess so.
I don't know. I would love to be able to just say no to Tina Fey and Lorne Michaels.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I do it all the time.
You have to.
They're not listening. But
Tom Booker, didn't you audition for Saturday Night Live?
The closest I came was once in Chicago. The talent agent from Saturday Night Live was driving in the back seat of a car with Susan.
And you told them a
Susan
joke.
Susan Messy and I. Yeah. They were coming to see me in Coed Prison Sluts, the musical. Don't know why I didn't make it on SNL.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing the movie. I
wasn't sure when I went to go see the musical version. They did a spectacular job.
They did a great job.
Taking from the movie and turning it. And
one of the best uses of video projection I've seen.
Really?
They really used it in a way that was...
And that was one of the really cool things that Morgan and I liked when we went backstage, was learning how everything was done. It was so fetch. But stop trying to make fetch happen. The way they used... They were showing us... I took pictures of it from behind, but these little teeny boxes that made it this big.
Yeah, they're called cubes, actually.
Yes, but it was one of the first ones before the way they did this projection. Yeah. It was really cool.
Yep. They're great. Actually, thinking about buying some of those for Ground Floor Theater.
Here's my problem with this whole movie thing. And I know you've talked about it. I'm annoyed that they don't make it seem like it's a musical in all the darn trailers. That bothers me. What also really bothers me is they've now taken it from all the marketing was always either all the Mean Girls or Katie, and it's all just Regina George.
Yeah.
So why are we focusing on a Mean Girl all the time? I don't know. I think it sends a bad message, and it bothers me.
Well, you know what? I'm going to wait until I see. I'm not going to judge from the trailer.
Katie's now a side note. And the whole thing is to teach you not to be a Mean Girl. So I'm like, what lesson are we? That's a mixed message of a lesson.
Okay. Well, I think
I'm a marketer, so you know, that's just that.
I think we've hit Mean Girls. So to speak.
Oh, I did like that Lindsay Lohan, who never comes out to play, was on the red carpet for the movie and came out to play and see it.
Wonderful. May we switch topics now?
Yes, because you have some stuff I want to talk about.
Okay, great. Well, we did have an opening on Broadway. Y'all have heard of Broadway?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, good. Thank God. Tom,
yes.
Nodding does not work on the radio.
Oh. Okay.
Just want to let you know that.
All right. Got my thumbs up.
That doesn't work either.
Oh.
It's a
new meme.
Prayer for the French Republic opened. It's transfer from off-Broadway. They had the aggregator. Did they like it? Had 10 reviews, 5 of which were positive, 5 of which were middle of the road. No negatives. I will read this little breakdown. In 1944, a Jewish couple in Paris desperately awaits the news of their missing family. More than 70 years later, the couple's great-grandchildren find themselves facing the same questions as their ancestors. Are we safe? This celebrated work by the author of Bad Jews and Significant Other is about history, home, and the effects of ancient hatred. It looks like a really good show. It opened at the Samuel Friedman Theater. All the critics seem to, first of all, equate it, not directly, but in subject matter, to Leopoldstadt, the Tom Stoppard play.
Yes.
They all seem to want to compare it to Leopoldstadt, which I get. It's all about anti-Semitism. This looks like a very interesting show. They also, I should say that it was directed by David Cromer, who's done a lot of stuff lately. I just almost called him Mel Gusso, who was years and years ago. Jesse Green wrote the review for the Times. And he says, and the play, for all its urgency, is already way too much. Running just over 3 hours, Prayer of the French Republic, which opened Tuesday at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater, is not long enough to do the history justice, which I think is interesting. I'm looking at Patty Neff Tiffin over here, who's having a little heart attack at a three-hour show.
Yeah, I'm on the same page.
I'm on the same page, too, but when I went to see Ferryman, which was a little over 3 hours, you don't feel it. So if it's done right, you could do a three-hour show with no problem.
I mean, there's always an exception to the rule.
Yep. I'm going to need you to stay in front of the microphone when you speak, just so you know.
Well, why? Is that how radio works? That
is how radio works.
Lisa's being a mean girl.
I know. He talks about the exceptional skill of the principal actors, and he says, quote, chief among them is Betsy Adim as Marcel Solomon Benhamo, a psychiatrist living in Paris in 2016, did I mention it takes place in France?
Yes.
Okay, thank God. Who seems the need for a psychiatrist herself, which
it's
is
okay, French
normal.
And France is in the title.
That's true. Overprotective yet hypercritical of her two children, she loses control of them. Daniel is beaten up by anti-Semitic thugs near the schools where he teaches. Marcel's frenzied response creates a fissure in the family that the play then proceeds to pry wide open. Her husband, Charles, a physician who emigrated to France from Algeria when conditions became impossible for Jews in the early 60s, eventually concludes that, like his native country then, his adopted now one is profoundly unsafe, familiar with sudden uprootings, he wants to move as soon as possible to Israel. The play talks about, and this is something that is, throughout history, throughout Jewish history, in terms of Jews being forced away and move. And it's kind of happening again right now in a little bit. And then the play was originally off Broadway during the massacre at the synagogue in Philadelphia. Where was it? Anybody remember?
I think you might be right. I think it was Philly area.
Where did it go? He took all the references to that out because it's no longer prescient, but it's still, anti-Semitism is having an upswing. So it's very interesting. It looks like something I would like to see.
Does look interesting.
He ends the review by saying, but like Tom Stoppard's Leopoldstadt, Prayer for the French Republic its title, the name of a blessing recited in French synagogues for 200 years, gets lost in its central question. How can Jews know if it's time to leave yet another home in a history of hundreds where they think they are safe but may soon find themselves otherwise? The prayer that they may not have to leave at all, the prayer for the end of antisemitism itself, has not been answered yet.
Hmm.
It's like an interesting show.
Yes.
One of the podcasts I listened to about Broadway, he thought evidently the when it was off Broadway, it had like major raves across the board. This time, not raves.
Not as many.
Not bad.
I would have been curious to see it before. And
like, Ken, do you know anything about this show?
After the transfer.
I saw Bad Jews in New York. Is right. Josh Harmon, is that the place?
Yes, Josh Harmon wrote Bad Jews and this show.
Yeah, I was not familiar with this one.
Yeah, it makes me seem like I want to see it. Mm-hmm. Patty, what do you think?
It sounds pretty depressing to me.
Actually, it's not. They
for
say
3 hours?
They say it's quite funny. Lots of humor.
Really?
Lots of fun.
Yep. Okay, then I might be able to tolerate 3 hours. Yep. I will say that. Okay. I was like, serious subject matter in 3 hours? Ugh. I need short attention span.
Theater. That's true. Well, I keep going to The Ferryman because it was just such an... Anybody see The Ferryman?
No.
It was just such an amazing show. Not terribly happy, but you did not feel that 3 hours going by. Other critics for Prayer of the French Republic, Brittany Samuels of Broadway News said, director David Cromer meets Harmon beat for beat. Cromer's direction embraces the quirks of human behavior. His actors stumble over words when trying to form thoughts, increase the feverishness of their hand-waving when making a point, and hush their pajama-clad conversation with speaking in the intimate dark. New York Daily News' Chris Jones said, whatever your identity, rarely in Broadway theater will you have more powerfully felt your own vulnerability. And finally, Sarah Holdren of Vulture said, zingy, morbid humor and motor mouth diatribes are the playwright's weapons of choice, not lyricism or sentimentality.
It's an interesting just premise, because I don't know about y'all, but I know that there's so many people I know right now, not Jewish, necessarily, but who are talking about leaving. Are we safe here? When do you know when it's time to leave? So I think it's an interesting question.
Well, the queer community is certainly dealing with that. The trans community, I know so many people that have already moved because this is just a dangerous place for trans people to be. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's, you know,
it's in the zeitgeist.
Obviously it's broader than just Jewish people. And currently right now in this state, it's not a really nice place to be for LGBTQ people or women, mm-hmm. or, you know, just about anybody. Mm-hmm. All right. That depressed me. let's go on to, Nicole's favorite topic.
Been saying it for 20 years.
Do it. What am I talking about?
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain, baby.
The musical is coming.
It's going to be a musical.
Well, it already was a musical in 1984 by that little man that I miss every darn day. But I have been saying, they keep taking all these musicians and making musicals. I'm like, you have missed the boat on one of the greatest artists that wrote everything like a musical. Basically, gave you a musical because it was already that fabulous movie in 1984. And the people behind it are some really like... fantastic folks.
Brandon Jacobs Jenkins is writing it.
Writing the book.
And
Orin, what's his name from Once and the Orin other one?
Orin Wolf is producing.
Mm-hmm.
And the director is Liliana Blaine Cruz. I just wanted to say Cruz.
Cruz. So there's no casting, no date, no what, but I mean, the fact that it's on the horizon. Finally, I mean, thank you for listening to Offstage and On the Air and doing this for me.
Yeah.
But just so exciting. I'm a new obsession now to watch Go experience.
So we know how Nicole feels about this. You're going to hate this. I've never.
You don't like Prince.
I don't. It's not that I don't like him. I don't know why everybody is so crazy about him.
Have you stopped to really watch footage of him take a guitar in his hand?
I didn't like Purple Rain when it came out. I'm sorry. But is everybody else like really excited about the idea of this?
And he was so interesting because it was the first, I mean, it just appeared so gender fluid and was so sexy. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't anything really like that out there. And also, I know
how about David Bowie?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but David Bowie too. But David Bowie's had music and has musicals and things on stage. Yeah. And he was the other one that I was like, where's David Bowie and Prince? So
there we go.
Finally, the cool thing about Prince, he really experienced and took art in every art form. He loved ballet. He loved different things. His final little concert wasn't really a tour. It was the Welcome to America tour where he did pop-ups. But he had Misty Copeland, before Misty Copeland was head of ABT, on stage dancing while he's just playing solo, and Sheila E. on the bongos and Maceo Parker on the sax. Like, the greatest musicians. Like, and you're in the middle of Madison Square Garden, like...
You're so passionate, I had to turn down your microphone.
That was crazy. I'm literally going to start crying. He's... You know, people that you're famous, they affect you. I lost it, and I'm going to lose it again. He is a special, special person. I'm just so excited. I hope a whole new generation gets down with Prince, too, because wowza.
Lovely. Well, we'll look forward to, we'll make a trip to New York to see the opening.
You didn't play any. I'm mad at you for that one.
Yeah, well, we'll get around to it. we're, of course, running out of time to hardly even touch the things that I want to talk about. You'll be able to go to offstageonair.com and see what we didn't talk about. But one of the things is a very interesting season that Roundabout Theater is doing, of which is a new take on Pirates of Penzance, a jazzy version of Pirates and Penzance, with the new rewriting by Rupert.
I still love the movie with Christopher Atkins and Linda Ronstadt and Kevin Kline.
Well, that movie was taken from the Broadway, the Public Theater's Broadway show that was a Broadway version of it that was at the... Shakespeare in the Park. Anyway, so Rupert Holmes has taken part and rewritten the music and then rewritten the story, because we know that Gilbert and Sullivan are a little problematic
in regards
to the way they treat women and other people that aren't white men. They're trying to fix a little bit of that.
That'd be interesting.
So go ahead and look at that. And their other two shows they're doing is Yellowface, David Henry Hwang, and Sanaz Tutsi's work called English. I did not realize this. You probably knew this, that they're renaming the American Airlines Theater.
Oh, I did see that.
To the Todd Haymes Theater, who was the artistic director of Roundabout for years, which means I probably met him. I don't remember it, but he passed away last year, I believe. And they're renaming the theater after him. So it's going to be the Tom Haymes Theater. So you can read all about that at offstageonair.com. Kimberly Akimbo is closing.
I know.
That's very sad. Closing in April. I'm just going to task you with this, Nicole, because I know you would like it. This is the Takara Zuka Review, all women Japanese.
Yeah.
It looks very, very interesting.
Anything Japanese,
and then the other thing you need to read is this new musical called "The Ghost of John McCain."
Yeah, I saw that and I giggled.
It looks like a lot of fun. It's a book by Scott Elmengreen and score by Drew Fenoya. I'm just going to read this because it's sort of fun. It's a psychological exploration of power, rivalry, and human condition. When the late soldier turned senator awakens in the afterlife, he finds himself trapped inside the mind of President Donald Trump, alongside a quasi-Greek chorus of other public figures, including Hillary Clinton, Roy Cohn, Eva Perón, Teddy Roosevelt, Robert Jordan, and Lindsey Graham.
That's why I started giggling when I was reading this. I was like, well, okay.
Yeah, in order to escape, the Motley Crue is forced to engage in a high-stakes debate over life, legacy, and American values. So that they're having a reading right now. And the final thing I want to just mention is it looks like there's going
this
to be a revival of Gypsy.
Starring one...
Audra McDonald.
And I'm here for it. You know, you got to get a gimmick if you want to get ahead.
There's nothing that she can't do.
No!
Record six Tony Awards.
In all the categories. No one's done that. From like leading actress, supporting, musical, straight, like...
Yep. Tony winning performances in Carousel, Masterclass, Ragtime, Raisin in the Suns, Porgy and Bess, and Lady Day.
I was
and
like, she's Lady got Day.
Tony nominated for Marie Christine, Tommy nominated for 110 in the Shade, Frankie and Johnny, the Claire de Lune. She also performed at Houston Grand Opera.
She did.
She did, amongst other things. So we'll play a little bit from Gypsy, but this is also, I didn't realize, for the 2015 West End version with Imelda Staunton, which I kept waiting to see a cast album back in, at that time and never saw one.
Never,
and,
yeah.
Well, there's one, and it came out several years ago.
Oh,
and
really?
I just saw it today for the first time. So okay. Let's listen to Imelda Staunton just talking about everything coming up, Roses. We'll be right back.
You'll be so well.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On Air with Lisa and Nicole and a whole slew of other folks today. We're on 91.7 Co-op Community Radio. Radio for people, not for profits.
That's right.
You know what I did not say? I didn't say two things going into this show.
Oh, yes, important things.
Number one, I did not say what a great show Kim Simpson has.
Always.
And had in the International Folk Bazaar.
That Kim.
Love his music and his pronunciations. He went on and on about how to pronounce some Eastern European countries. You know, because they don't have vowels and you have to like trill your R's and do all this other stuff to make up for the lack of vowels.
He's a smart man.
Mm-hmm. When I replaced him, when I did his show last week or a couple weeks ago, I tried to pronounce things, but didn't do a very good job. I should also say the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not necessarily those of Co-op, the board of directors, the underwriters, the staff, or anybody else here at Co-op. It's just our opinion, and that's what
peeps.
It is.
That's it. That's just it. Ours.
Just us. So let's talk about what's going on here in Austin, Texas in Frontera Fest. And let's reintroduce everybody here. The artistic director over at Hyde Park Theater is Ken Webster. He's here.
Good afternoon.
Ken Webster, along with Christy Moore, who this is the first time we've talked Frontera Fest without Christy Moore here, who's running Scriptworks. The two of them put together Frontera Fest and have been doing so. Well, Frontera Fest has been going on for how many years, Ken?
It began in 1993. Vicky Boone, Jason Phelps, and Annie Sweet were at Ted's Greek Cafe on Congress Avenue, and they came up with the idea of doing an unjuried theater festival.
Uh-huh.
And Christy and I joined together to work on the festival. I've been involved in every one of the Frontera Fests in some capacity. But Hyde Park Theater and Scriptworks got together to do the 2002 Frontera Fest, and we've been working together ever since then. And this will be the 29th because we did not do a Frontera Fest in 2021 or 2022.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's amazing. And we have a couple of entrants into the festival this year. Jeff Deshay Johnson, hi.
Hello.
And then doing another piece is Tom Booker and Janet Makis. Hi, you guys.
Hello.
And I'm going to reintroduce Patty Neftivin just for the heck of it.
I am here.
Who has nothing to do with Frontera Fest except she used to be quite involved with Frontera Fest.
Yeah, and actually my very first Frontera Fest was in 2002. So that's fascinating. I didn't realize. But yes, I used to run the Long Fringe a lot.
2002 is a palindrome. In case anybody wanted to know.
It is.
Well, we've got these Frontera Fest legends that are going to do some.
We're going to hear a little bit of them.
One of the great things about the festival is every year it's a great combination of established performers and people who are brand new on the scene. Yeah.
Well, I know that you brought along your favorite entrance into the festival this year, but tell us, is there anything coming up that will be surprising or different or fun or anything that you want to mention this year?
Oh, I mean, as always, it's each night there's five shows, and everyone's going to be distinctly different, but it's mostly theater pieces, some improv, some movement, some dance, magic. There's a couple of
There's
like two or three of the 80 pieces, I think, involve magic in some way.
Lovely. I love. I'm a big fan. So it's five shows per night. Mm-hmm. How long can they be? What's the top?
They must be 25 minutes or less.
Or less. Okay, so five shows a night times five nights per week. And then you have best of the week.
Yes, Tuesday through Friday are the prelims.
Four.
Yeah, Tuesday through Friday. Five. Well, Tuesday through Friday are the prelims for the first 4 weeks, and then Saturday's best of the fest. Okay. The four Saturdays, the first 4 weeks have a Saturday best of the week, and then the fifth and final week is all the best of the festival.
That is incredible. I was fortunate enough to be able to be a panelist 1 year, which is really fun. And Patty Neftivin, you're doing that this year, yes? Yes.
Yes, if I am.
Yeah. And what does that mean, Patty? What are you going to do? What does being a panelist consist of?
Being a panelist, I've done it once in the past as well, as you have. You go, depending on if you are a panelist for the week or a panelist for Best of Fest, for the week, as I am doing, you go whatever week for four nights. You watch all the pieces. And on the Friday night, the panelists all get together and discuss and you rate things and you come up with the five pieces that will perform on the Saturday for best of the week. And then somebody, another group of panelists, comes to every Saturday performance and does the same thing to come up with the best of the festival.
Amazing. It's a lot of work, but a lot of fun as well.
We also involve the audience. The audience gets to vote on what shows they liked the best each night. So the panelists will pick four shows from the prelims, and then the audience vote will be the fifth show.
Excellent.
I love Frontera Fest because it's like, you could go to Rexall Drugs and there'd be a bin of little boxes and it would be, a grab bag and you would pay your dollar and you'd get it. You know, there'd be trinkets inside. And that's what Frontera Fest is. Just buy a ticket, show up, and enjoy.
Yeah.
They had boxes of drugs?
No, Rexall Drugs. It wasn't drugs. It was, like a Super Bowl and maybe a keychain. It was never worth a buck, but,
But there you go. But
I was young, and it was Omaha, so that was a lot of fun back then.
Super Bowls are super. Jeff, tell us about what you're doing, spoken word, hip-hop.
Yeah,
stuff.
Hip hop theater with Zell Miller III.
We've heard of him.
We have a collective called Zenogia Spoken Word Collective, and we are sound bombing the stage. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. That's probably one of those words.
No, you're good.
No, you're good.
You can say sound bomb.
Sound, yeah. In hip hop culture, it's kind of like. When you say break a leg.
Yeah. Have you done Frontera Fest before?
Oh, yes. Many, many, many times.
How many times have you done it? Which one is, how many, what is this, what are you up to now?
So many have lost track.
I mean, Zell, my big brother now, but I started out as his mentee. So when I was cutting my teeth in the theater game, he was bringing me to Frontera Fest. I learned real quick that expression is a contact sport.
That's wonderful.
A great way. I like that.
You may not, necessarily know. It's just like he said. You just get the grab bag. There's something in there for everybody.
There you go. And then if you don't like what you're seeing, just wait.
Just wait.
So you're willing to do a little piece of your entry, yes?
Yeah.
You want to set it up for us?
Sure. I liked. I don't like telling people.
Okay, we'll just jump into it. Does it have a title? You want to share that part?
Arms of Sirius.
Arms of Sirius. My sorority name in college.
The first pen stroke was the father of eternity, mother of the galaxy spine, which gave birth to planets that birth Earth of their own. And the pen strikes precise with the anger of poverty-stricken thoughts saturated with the plasma of life. I've gone on to a higher plateau that only God and Mama Earth know. The forgotten smell of extraterrestrial cotton has been washed clean by blue and green angelic dreams, the hymns that give this pen to me. I babble the javelin that time travels through space. My hybrid blood is the ocean that regret swims in with the nerve to complain about the soil walked on by the soiled feet of burden-ridden infants who came too close to leaving against their will, and their kidneys chill on the inside of them with no fluid left to defecate except the decaying fate of accelerated wakes that seem to last forever. Bellies burning with southern intellect, rarely respected by aliens from other hemispheres. Perplexed by the atmosphere the pen creates, I am noosed by the words. I am hung on the words of the creator that I've never seen nor heard with the third while unfocused.
Hmm. Amazing. Very good.
Yeah, that was awesome sauce. Woo!
That's great.
Did you write that just for this Frontera Fest, or was that a piece that you've written before?
That piece is probably older than Frontera Fest.
Okay.
Wow. Like,
you don't look older than Frontera Fest.
Yeah. I think I could put a number on it. I think I started coming to Frontera Fest in around 99.
Wow.
And then I took part in it probably like 2001, maybe, with some like stage combat poetry, hodgepodge, everybody's trying to get on stage and fit it all in 25 minutes. And yes.
So I know I know it's too late now, but how if I was an up-and-coming spoken word writer or poet, what would you say to me to convince me to apply to be in Frontera Fest next year?
Oh, fall on your face. Mm-hmm. That's the place that you want to do that. You are, when you come in, for me anyway, when you come into Frontera Fest, whether it's new work or it's work that's been established, you are bringing it to an audience that is ready to receive it wherever it is. Mm-hmm. So if you're a fledgling, you know, submit your app. And I think that's like something for like performers in general. It's like, I think we get too caught up in the processes.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Ken, when do typically applications open up for Frontera Fest?
Usually in August and you don't actually have to wait, to next year's. We, usually have a waiting list and, I don't believe there's ever been a year when someone who got on the waiting list did not make it into the festival.
So I could go get on the waiting list to do my one-person show.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to do that.
We would charge
What
you
about our show?
Two-person show.
You didn't ask me to come.
If you apply to get on the waiting list, you're charged, but if you don't make it in, you get your money back.
Okay.
But it out of 80 pieces, there's just every year there's going to be some shows like, well, I never got around to writing my show, so I can't.
Okay. Well, excellent. Tom and Janet, tell us about your show.
Hello out there, Ted.
Oh, do you want to go ahead and do it?
Oh, no, yeah. No, I just don't want to. I want you to tell me about it before you. Unless you don't want
to. We're the Gothics,
yeah.
And we're the Texas Gothics. We came out of a show called Over the Ledge, and we just kept going.
Yeah,
and
whether
so before
liked
we
it or not.
Yeah, wherever it, and so before we, you know, before pandemic, we used to have a show once a month at the Institution Theater.
Our
I've
biggest
heard of that
fight
place.
Happened because there was a miscommunication regarding.
Well, because
rehearsal.
I have all the lines.
It's sort of an Alan and Burns type of thing.
And he wouldn't rehearse.
I was waiting for her to say, "I'm ready to rehearse."
Oh my gosh.
Ended up yelling through the walls of our home at each other.
I'm not doing this show.
Fine. Luckily, I owned the theater, so we canceled the show and did it the following week.
There you go. That was amazing. You will not be able to do that with Frontera Fest. You have to make you.
No,
you, know, you have a time
no.
slot.
Oh no!
All right,
yeah.
So no fighting.
We could
no.
be up for best fight of the week.
We
you know,
could.
You know, I don't like it when you fight. It makes me cry.
It doesn't happen a lot.
It hurts the children.
So you are. This is a take on American Gothic. Of course, that
yes,
is the
Texas version of the American Gothic painting.
Right, and that is the painting that has the man with the pitchfork. Yes. And the woman dutifully standing next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I
daughter.
Must say,
yeah.
That's his daughter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must say that so that painting hangs at the Art Institute in Chicago.
Chicago.
And my favorite museum of all time.
My favorite museum of all time in the world, too.
In the world. Mm-hmm. And that painting in particular, my favorite in that museum.
Oh, wow.
Is it really?
It's just, I was amazed at how, because it's so ubiquitous, it's on mm-hmm. cereal boxes. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting much out of it.
It's so much more seeing it than it is. I
can't explain why, but when
like
I sat there.
Where, like, the Mona Lisa is, like, so depressing when you see it, and that, yeah. like, so, like, really?
Mona Lisa looks better outside the
outside
Louvre,
of the,
on
yeah.
A, on a cereal
you
box.
You see it, you're like, really? That's it? But, like, the American Gothic is so, like, whoa, when yep. you see it in person.
Yep.
Yeah, that art institute. Lisa,
so good.
That's
so what?
Exciting.
So I remember y'all came on here before mm-hmm. when y'all were going to do this.
Yeah, 2018.
Yeah. How many times have y'all done this bit, and does it change?
Oh yes.
Oh yes. Yes, it always changes. They're very smart. They have a lot of political insight.
Oh.
And so since the shenanigans of politicians change, mm-hmm. then the insight has to change.
My favorite thing was when Austin went back from using paper bags to the single-use bags, and we told everybody to send bags of dog poop.
Yeah.
Because you can make it, you know, you use it as groceries, then you can pick up dog poop. That's two uses.
That's
and then you can write an address on it and use it as an envelope and send it to, was it Dan Patrick?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I think we.
And people did.
Yeah.
I would be up for reviving that one.
A single use bag became a double use bag, became a
triple
use
bag.
Yeah.
We'll hear a little piece of this right now. Yes,
sure,
we'll get an
yes.
idea of what it's actually like.
You got it.
Do y'all want to set it up, or you just want to jump in? I know that Janet wants to jump in, but
just
I don't know about
in.
You, Tom.
Just jump in.
Yeah. Okay, we're jumping in. Go.
Hello out there, Texas. I'm Ma.
And I'm Paul.
And we're the Gothics. We got our noses to the grindstone.
Ears to the rail.
And fingers on the pulse of the great Republic of Texas.
Basically, we're a farmer's Facebook.
A grassland Instagram.
A ranch Reddit.
And we're coming to you once again.
Thank our Lone Star.
From the Texas Gothic Farm and Ranch just outside of Mercury, Texas.
The center of Texas.
To tell you a thing or two.
You might want to take notes.
A thing or two about living.
Yep.
About loving.
Yep.
About being a well-rounded, well-grounded person who knows when it's time to speak up, like if your local state park hoaxes a Klan reunion every year.
We're not talking about the McGregor family get-together. That kind of a Klan is spelled with a C.
And we know a thing or two because we've done a thing or two.
Yep.
Sometimes twice.
Yep.
Back in 2020, when COVID shut down our latest money-making venture, the South Spa.
The number one choice for ladies to get pig-infused mud baths and pork-fried facials.
Took a nosedive. We decided to do something new.
Something different.
Something wild.
Something no one would ever think of.
We moved to Nashville.
YOLO!
That's right. In the middle of the worldwide pandemic, we loaded up the hounds and headed to Music City.
Just take a ride at Dallas and don't stop until you smell the hot chicken.
We moved from the Lone Star State to the Tri-Star State.
Yep.
They call Tennessee the Tri-Star State because there's one star for each different region of Tennessee.
West Tennessee has the Mississippi Delta.
Middle Tennessee has green rolling hills.
And East Tennessee has the Smoky Mountains.
That's your Tennessee fun fact.
You're welcome.
Now, I have to say that Tennessee is pretty.
Green as the day is long.
And they have four times as many seasons as we do in Texas.
Fall, winter, spring, and summer.
Every summer.
Yep.
Yep. Well, when we arrived in Nashville, we found out there was something in Texas that they didn't have in Tennessee.
Yep.
COVID. Even though Nashville calls itself the Austin of the South,
ha.
In February 2021, when Austin was shut down because Austinites were all in it together.
One for all and all for breakfast tacos.
When we got to Nashville, we learned there wasn't a pandemic at all.
They must think science is silly.
They only wore masks on Halloween.
Yep.
And this was one of the many things we were surprised to learn about Nashville.
Yep.
We learned that because it's a fun city. Nashville is the bachelorette capital of the universe.
Every Thursday, a wave of out-of-town women arrive in Nashville wearing matching tank tops, bejeweled cowboy hats, sparkly boots, and extra short shorts.
It's like they're all coming from a Daisy Duke convention.
And boy, Heidi, these ladies know how to party.
We're not leaving till we're heaving.
And who knew? There were so many ways to haul a gaggle of half-naked women drunk on peach schnapps and White Claw.
Not me.
There are buses with the tops cut off.
Giant front loaders hauling trailers.
Tractors pulling trailers.
Run-of-the-mill pedal bars.
Even a big old truck hauling a see-through hot tub.
All in the name of forthcoming nuptials.
Woo!
Uh-oh.
Well, these are some of the wonderful things about Nashville.
Yep.
There are also old restaurants called Meat and Threes where you order a type of meat.
Like meatloaf or a pork chop.
And order three vegetables to go with it.
Like green beans or potato salad.
But the best thing about restaurants in Nashville is...
Macaroni and cheese is considered a vegetable.
Yep.
I'll take the macaroni and cheese salad to go, please.
The best thing about Nashville, really, is that it's the home to the one and the only Dolly Parton.
Hello, Dolly.
Now, Taylor Swift is nice and all, but she's no Dolly Parton.
At least not yet.
Nope, but Dolly Parton is someone we should all strive to be like.
What would Dolly do?
I don't know what she will do, but I can tell you what she's done. She donated $1 million to fund a COVID vaccine.
She created a bald eagle sanctuary in East Tennessee.
And she's given over 100 million books to children around the world.
And many, many other things for the benefit of everyone around the world.
Yep, among the least of these, she gives to...
That's from the Bible.
Well, that's right, Paul.
Which Dolly Parton wrote.
Nope.
My bad.
Well, the biggest lesson we learned is that sometimes you gotta go to someplace new, someplace exciting, someplace with bachelorettes, just to realize how much you love the place where you came from.
Yep.
So we're back, fella Texans.
God bless Texas.
Oh, that's right, Paul.
Oh my gosh! How much fun is that?
Great.
But I just want to know how you spell mercury.
M E R C U R Y.
Mercury. Just that like is so much so fun funny. And God, amazing. We're running out of time. Ken, when does this happen?
Oh, the whole shebang. Tech rehearsals begin Saturday, but
But if festival, I want to get it, if I want to come and see it, when do
oh,
I?
Oh, that's Tuesday, January 16th.
The 16th, and it goes through when?
February 17th.
The 17th of February. That's like a whole month. And where can folks go to get more information?
The Hyde Park Theater website,
which is
hydeparktheater.org. It's got descriptions of the shows and how to get.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for coming.
Thank you.
And I should just, we don't really have time to talk about it, but there are other programs around Frontera Fest, like the Mi Casa Es Su Teatro.
Yes, February 10th.
It's February 10th, and other things. You can get all of that on the Hyde Park Theater website.
Correct.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
All right. That was Ken Webster, Tom Booker, Jeff Shay Johnson, and Janet Mikus. Oh, I have Tom Booker in here twice, so congratulations. So nice they put you twice. Christy Moore did not make it here. Frontera Fest Short Fringe goes from the 16th of this month to the 17th of next month. For more information, hydeparktheater.org. And this is from the show Band Geeks the Musical, which looks like a lot of fun. It's called Festival of Champions. We'll be right back.
At the Festival of Champions.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Nicole. How much fun was that?
It was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. Many people have left. I see staying with us for our next little
section.
Tom Booker
is
here.
You know why? Because he's on the list twice.
Yes.
Because he was on the list twice.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Ken Webster is still here.
Hello.
And even though she doesn't want to talk, Patty Neftivin is here.
I am still here.
All right. Let's just talk about what's going on local. I heard a thing on Arts Eclectic with Michael Lee.
Michael Lee.
That I thought was very interesting. It's the Indian Dance Endeavor. It's a show called Mira, The Way of the Storm. It's happening the 13th and the 15th. At the Georgetown Performing Arts Center.
That's cool.
This is part of an Indian dance company. I want to read the... here's the description. Meera, a princess of yore, dedicated to her heart to Lord Krishna from an early age. As she grew, she became his most famous devotee, as well as a trailblazer, social reformer, and prolific composer of songs that are still sung to this day. She endeavored to empower commoners, renounce her own privilege, and undertook a moving journey to some of the holiest sites associated with Lord Krishna. This one-of-a-kind musical in English captures her life from childhood through marriage and exile, and finally to her death and beyond. An imaginative tale appropriate for all ages, Meera captures one of the most famous women in the history of India. Sounds really, really fascinating. You can get information. I found the best way to get was through Now Playing Austin.
Yeah.
But it looks so interesting. Or you can go to Offstage and On the Air, offstageonair.com. There is a link to the Michael Lee interview, and you can hear that. So what do you think? Anybody?
Exciting.
Okay. All right. Here's what's playing. Oh, and we didn't get a chance to talk about this. What? Yeah, we can still talk about it. Tina, the Tina Turner musical, is playing right now at Bass Concert Hall as part of Broadway in Austin. I went to see it last night. It's visually stunning.
It is.
If you like Tina Turner...
If you like Tina Turner, you definitely will like it.
You will learn about her life, which is not easy.
No, and you can't shy away from it when telling Tina's story, but you don't leave being like, oh, like, it's got a really uplifting, what a woman.
It does. Well,
she
on her own, really talk about pulling yourself from her bootstraps.
She paved the way for some really cool women
stuff.
And people and stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
I missed Tina.
Good seeing. Tina. I have to say, I was talking to some people yesterday. I said, I'm going to see Tina, Turner. And, this person said, is she performing here? I said, my honey.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart. She just died about
within
a year.
Last year.
Yeah. Within the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, really fun. And it's playing over at Bass Concert Hall. You can get information at austin.broadway.com. At Austin Playhouse on the 13th and 14th, we have their Winter Cabaret.
Yes.
At Ground Floor Theater, Back to You, which opens this Friday, the 12th, plays through the 20th. And I will say, Chris, who was our guest last week, told me yesterday that he has never in his life been to a jukebox musical.
Really?
He's avoided them all. And yeah,
that's
Patty's given the high five on that one. But I
there are some exceptions to the jukebox musical.
Totally agree.
Yeah. And then there are some that like why?
Yeah,
why?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say most.
Yes, majority, but there are some special little beautiful pieces in between there.
Yep. So Austin Repertory Theater from the 19th of the month to the 28th is playing The Diviners. Filigree Theater is a very interesting show called Photograph 51 that opens on the 25th, plays through February 4th. Austin Playhouse has got The Spitfire Grill, a show I just directed a few months ago. Plays January 26th through the 18th. Something called Frontera Fest is playing the 15th of this month to the 16th of February.
16th of this month to the 17th of February.
16th to the 17th. 16th of January, February 17th. Oh my God, we're already out of time.
Yep.
Ground Floor Theater opens Always a Boy, February 15th. And Zach is doing The Great Comet.
Or Natasha Pierre and The Great Comet of 1812.
Correct. Thank you. It opens on January 31st and plays through March 3rd. Let's jump right into Today in Theater History. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Birthdays. Interestingly enough, Renee Rapp's birthday is today.
Oh. She is Regina George and a big deal.
She is indeed. James Lapine.
Oh, really?
Ray Bolger.
Oh.
Sal Mineo.
This is an eclectic little... What a tragic
Evan Handler.
Life that, Sal.
Yeah.
Sal Mineo, tragic life.
Tragic. Openings in 1947, Finian's Rainbow at the 46th Street Theater. 2008, The Little Mermaid opened. I thought it was long. I thought it was older than that. 1941, Arsenic and Old Lace at the Fulton Theater. The Other Place, which I really wanted to see, is the Samuel J. Friedman Theater, opened in 2013. And finally, Street Scene opened at the Playhouse in 1929.
Ooh.
Ray Bolger, as we know, played the Scarecrow in Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
Rather than do what we were going to do, we're going to finish up and just say goodbye, and we'll finish up with this. And I just closed my theater. He was in a musical called All American, which didn't do really well, and he's going to sing I'm Fascinating. But one of the things that I was going to play was something that just came out. It's an English a show in Great Britain called The Little Big Things, which looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'll play it next week. Coming up next, we have the Cooperative Radio Hour this week, Lights, Camera, Austin, with our very good friend Robert Sims. We're looking forward to everything. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you all for being here.
Tom Booker, Ken Webster, Patty Neff Tiven.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Next week, we will be back here looking at what's happening off stage and on the air. And let's go. Hopefully, I have enough music. We're going to like finish just a little early. Let's listen to Ray Bolger, whose birthday it is. He's going to be singing I'm Fascinating. Let's see if this. Hold on. Let me just make sure we are. And here we are.
I'm fascinating. They seem to think that I am fascinating. I used to drop things on the floor before. I know I was a bore, but now I'm fascinating. How could a man who was pedantic become so terribly romantic?